And we're back here on Unusual Sources, 93.3 CFMU FM, bringing you the sources you don't ordinarily get to hear in the corporate media. And we're excited today because we should have on the line with us Dustin Langley from the Stop the War on Iran campaign. And, well, Dustin, he is a Navy veteran, and he's one of the national coordinators of the Stop War on Iran campaign. Very pertinent issue. So let's see if our lines are working. Dustin, can you hear me? Perfect. Okay. You've come in loud and clear. We're broadcasting out of our production studio today, but that's not stopping us. Everything is going loud and clear. Well, I'd like to thank you very much for coming on the program today with us. Iran's been in the news quite a lot. And I know we introduced you as being from the Stop War on Iran campaign. I'm not sure if we have anything like that in Canada, to my knowledge. So could you just tell us what this organization does?
Well, the Stop War on Iran campaign was started 4 years ago now. In response to what we saw as growing threats of a U.S. attack against Iran, and also in response to what were already was already going on, acts of war, infiltration, sanctions, etc. And we're an international campaign. Our initial signers included folks like Michael Parenti and Ramsey Clark and George Galloway, Tony Benn, former First Lady of Greece, Margarita Papandreou. And since that time, we've been at major and small anti-war demonstrations with Stop War in Iran literature and signs. And we've been holding teach-ins and meetings across the country, Los Angeles, New York, Boston, and sort of getting the word out about the need to mobilize to stop or prevent a U.S. or Israeli attack against Iran.
Yes, and a possible U.S. or Israeli attack against Iran is in the news. There was the notice that your organization put out about Vice President Biden when Biden said he wouldn't stand in the way if Israel was to attack, that it was, you know, their right to do so. They're openly and directly threatening Iran once again.
Well, and considering that Iran does not make a move without a U.S. okay, and that the entire military, Israeli military operation is funded by U.S. dollars, permission is essentially a green light. I mean, it's just more than just saying we're okay with it if you want to do it. This is a green light, and this is a serious situation. And it's a moment when the anti-war movement in the U.S., Canada, worldwide, needs to be very clear about which side we're on.
There's a lot of flack being directed against Iran by the corporate media right now, and it's a difficult time for the peace movement. It's not necessarily the case that it should be, but people are forgetting some of the things that are happening in that country. You've talked about subversion, right? There's campaigns to undermine the government in Iran to promote regime change. What do you mean by that?
Well, the U.S. is not even secretive about this. I mean, they announced publicly, you can find this in the New York Times, the Post, major newspapers, ABC News, you know, have all reported that at least since 2007, and probably before, but in 2007, President Bush signed documents, signing off on CIA plans for a full-scale destabilization campaign intended to topple the government in Tehran, including, you know, destabilization, working through various NGOs and front groups, and this has been, you know, clearly with the intent of regime change.
At the same time, I mean, this is a multifaceted thing because you also have the media, right? And when these elections happened, the media were all over it. And they were over that issue to a degree that they don't give coverage to certain other things like that coup in Honduras, for example, but you saw it all over the news. So there's a lot of pressure being brought against this country from more than one direction.
Well, you know, you and I have been to anti-war demonstrations. And I've been in Washington, D.C., where we've had 250,000 people out on the streets against the war in Iraq. And the New York Times, if they covered us at all, put us on page 12 or page 16 and gave us two paragraphs and said we were much smaller than we actually were. And, you know, virtually no coverage on CNN, et cetera, et cetera. And yet, when these protests happened, even before the protests happened, really, the media just switched in unison to 24-hour coverage of these protests.
They're pretty good at doing that when it's on certain issues of concern. I mean, in the build-up to the Iraq war, we were getting lots of stories. They were interviewing Iraqi dissidents who said they wanted to bring, you know, human rights and freedom and democracy to Iraq. And we'd hear from people that were possibly harmed by the regime and so on. And it turned out some of these stories were false or they were by hucksters. But the media was all over, and we got to see it every day when Bush was trying to get us to attack Iraq.
Well, you know, everybody knew within hours, everybody knew the name of NATO. And I don't want to make light of the death of any individual, but everybody knew her name within a couple of hours of her being shot. And nobody I know can tell you the name of anybody in Honduras who's been killed by the coup. Now, why is that? I mean, why is it that as soon as NATO was killed, she became an icon, and posters of her were available to protesters on the street within a couple of hours? And everybody across the world knew her name. President Obama was tearing up about her. And yet, what are the names of the folks who were killed in Honduras, and why don't we know about them, and where are their posters? Well, and who's tearing up about them?
I mean, that's especially ironic to me, because some people in CNN and the Twitter movement were calling Ahmadinejad's victory in Iran a coup, right? They were calling the electoral victory of the government a coup d'etat. But when an actual coup d'etat happens in Honduras, where there's actual people on the streets trying to organize general strikes, military battalions resisting the coup government and so on, and people getting shot down in the streets, and BBC and everyone knows about it, we don't hear that, and we don't get the same kind of coverage, even though all the issues that concern them so much about Iran were happening in Honduras.
Right, which just, you know, it just exposes the absolute hypocrisy and moral bankruptcy of the administration in Washington to cry about democracy when, in fact, the election of Iran, whatever you think of President Ahmadinejad or the elections, that's the Iranian people's business, but the election results lined up pretty well with all the polls that had been coming out for weeks and months, including polls that had published in the U.S. media. And, you know, this really smells like another color revolution, like we saw in, you know, Georgia and Ukraine. As a matter of fact, Timmerman, who runs the Foundation for Democracy, and I've forgotten his first name, but he runs a group called the Foundation for Democracy, which is funded by the National Endowment for Democracy, which is a U.S. government organization. He announced the night before the election that he thought there was going to be a green revolution in Tehran. Well, how did he know that? And, you know, on what basis did he think that? Nobody else was looking at that and thinking that.
The National Endowment for Democracy, now there's a name that's familiar on this program. Every time we try to talk about Honduras or Venezuela or Haiti, Ukraine, and any of these countries, the NED always pops up because, you know, they're the open arm of U.S. foreign policy, right? And
there's two large organizations. One is the National Endowment for Democracy, and the other one is the International Republican Institute. And they basically do the same thing. They give funding and equipment and support to... Well, their websites say to promote democracy, that their idea of democracy and our idea of democracy may be substantially different. You know, we know about, for instance, the role that they played in the attempted coup against President Hugo Chavez.
Learning about your organization, I had received an email the other day. It went through a bunch of email lists, and it was from the Stop the War on Iran campaign, and it talked about an event that's happening in the United States about these Iranian elections and so forth. Apparently, there's going to be demonstrations on the 25th of this month, so July 25th, and what, are they calling for democracy or something in Iran?
Well, it's a group that appeared out of nowhere at first look, called United for Iran. They can be found at unitedforiran.org if anybody wants to check them out. And it was kind of interesting because as someone, you know, like yourself, as an activist who's helped mobilize and put together demonstrations, I know what kind of work it takes to get something like that going in a substantive way, in a real way. And the money and the logistics and the hours of work. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, came this website that on July 25th, we're going to march for, you know, democracy and human rights in Iran. And so I was wondering, well, where do these people come from? What are they doing? And, of course, you look at their list of supporters on their website, and these are groups like the Iranian League for Defense of Human Rights, the International Campaign for Human Rights in Iran, FIDH, and all of these groups that they're listing, or virtually all of these groups, can be easily proven to be front groups or at least funded by the NED. So this is essentially a protest being organized by the United States government for calling for regime change in Iran. And now they have, it looks like 20 or 30 cities are having demonstrations in Los Angeles, New York, San Diego, St. Louis, Oslo, Paris, Stockholm. And all of these groups that are putting this on are organizations that receive money from these same organizations who put on color revolutions elsewhere. It's really, it looks to me like a very clear attempt to give a progressive humanitarian justification for U.S. intervention in Iran. And that's what's dangerous about this, is that when folks like this maneuver to try to convince people in the peace movement to give cover to U.S. military aggression. And that's what this is. And that's why we felt so strongly that we needed to put out a statement immediately, because not only did we see that the site was up and they were calling for demonstrations in just a few days, but one of the largest anti-war organizations in the United States, United for Peace and Justice, is now promoting and organizing and mobilizing for this. And, you know, we felt it was time to say, which side are you on? This is left cover for a U.S. military strike. And right now, we need to be very clear about this.
Oh, I'm just thinking it's very much like Iraq. In the lead-up to the war, they did have all those expatriates and pushing for this. But there's a word for what you're describing, at least that's been told to me, and that's astroturf. You know, it's like fake grassroots movements.
Yes, absolutely. And all of these groups, you know, they have these, you know, convincing names. You know, the Iranian League for the Defense of Human Rights. Well, who's not for, you know, the Defense of Human Rights? But you find out these guys are funded out of the State Department. And anybody who's seen the U.S. government record in Iran knows that the U.S. is definitely not concerned with human rights, not what you and I would consider human rights. They're concerned with profit and conquest. And that's what this is about. This is a way to, this is an attempt to neutralize and confuse the progressive and anti-war movement, to get us divided at a moment of crisis when we need to be solid and clear and ready to get out on the streets to oppose another act of U.S. aggression, whether it's directly to the U.S. or through its proxy, Israel.
In some ways, it was hard at first to get everyone around the issue of stopping the war or opposing an intervention or an invasion in Iraq, because at first people were kind of confused and divided about it. They were saying, well, I don't like war and I don't like invasions, but Saddam's bad, or that regime's got to go, or there could be weapons and so on. But eventually, as people came to see how things were unfolding, they realized that we really had to stop this war. And we thought you had made progress there too, because here in Canada, there's the war in Afghanistan, and people were confused on that, but increasingly people are coming to stand against that war too. But now in Iran, it's like we're back to square zero.
Well, it really is, and they have worked overtime to make this issue confusing. And it doesn't matter what you and I think about President Ahmadinejad. It doesn't matter what you and I think about the elections. Those are issues that the Iranian people have the right and the ability to deal with. Our responsibility is to stand against imperialism, against another military attack, against a phony color revolution or regime change done in the name of human rights. Because you can be assured that when the U.S. gets involved in regime change, that human rights are not the thing that follows after that. You know, we look at Gitmo or the torture chambers of Abu Ghraib as evidence enough of that.
It's pretty hard to sign up behind these kind of things when you think about what's really involved. And I know it must be frustrating in the United States having to deal with this all over again. Now, you're calling for actions. I'm not entirely certain what they are, but on August 1st, you're planning some kind of response. Is it gone from demos to an educational initiative now?
Well, it's both. We've been meeting and talking with allies across the U.S. and in Canada as well about what the best response is, and I think there's going to be some folks who are going to come out and do some protests and pickets and things. But a lot of us really felt like what needed to happen was to to use this moment to really call for some clarity on the situation. And what we're going to do here in New York is we're going to have a public forum, and we're going to talk about who's behind the drive for regime change in Iran, who these groups are. You know, and it's, you know, it's not even like you have to be a sleuth to figure out who these groups are. You Google the name of the group and you Google NED, and you get a whole bunch of hits. But we're gonna have a public forum here in New York, and I think we're gonna probably end up having them in several other cities, Los Angeles and Boston, and possibly Detroit. And we're still getting details in as we're talking to people. But one of the things we want to do here in New York is just sort of do a real clear presentation, point by point, line upon line. Who are the players? What's the agenda? And what's at stake here? And then make sure we get get the videos of that up and around and on the web and on YouTube and other places like that. Because this is a point in time when the anti-war movement has a responsibility to think a little bit and not to drink the Kool-Aid and look at what's behind the hype. If we don't do it, we're really failing our responsibilities.
Right. I'm just thinking the Kool-Aid is a very appropriate statement. I mean, a lot of people seem to be lining up coincidental with a propaganda campaign. And I'm wondering, is this a matter of education then? Why are people taking the position that they are on Iran if they're people who are involved in anti-war movements, if they're peace activists?
There was so much propaganda, and even myself. I mean, having marched in numerous demonstrations and with run-ins with law enforcement that sometimes involves, and I see people on the streets marching and you know, getting beat up with cops, my sympathies naturally go with the protesters. And I think a lot of people are dissuaded 24 hours a day. CNN had, was the All Iran All the Time network for quite some time. And, we naturally sympathize with what we're being told this is about, because we're being told that these protesters who had a stolen election, and, you know, those of us who live here in the U.S., we know a thing or two about stolen elections. And a lot of us are still angry about that. And we hear a call for human rights and women's rights and democracy. Well, we're all for those things. But we have a responsibility not to buy the advertising slogans, because that's what CNN is doing. Is they're advertising, they're marketing a product. And we have to look at what the product is, because the product is not human rights. The product they're selling is war. And we got to look past the slogans and realize that.
Well, I got to agree there. As someone who's involved in community radio, campus radio, this is about discussion and dialogue with people in the community and people who are activists. It's not about selling products. It's not about commercialism, and it's not buying into the corporate agenda. So I think our listeners can see things in that light. Well, I'd like to thank you very much for coming on our program. Where can people find out about this August 1st thing? Because I just heard about it yesterday.
We're online at stopwaroniran.org.
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 Yep. Okay, so it's one word. Okay. Well, thanks very much, Dustin. I'm looking forward to seeing what kind of actions come out of all this. I'm very glad there are people like you in the United States who are taking part in this debate and reminding people about what responsibilities of anti-war activists are and of people who are supposed to be thinking independently. So I'd like to thank you very much for coming on our program today.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure.
Thank you. Our pleasure, too. Bye-bye. And that was Dustin Langley. And Dustin is a Navy veteran and one of the national coordinators for the Stop War on Iran campaign. And you can find out more about that at stopwaroniran.org. Definitely a much needed voice to be heard, especially in the activist community in North America.